Well, we're going to talk to someone who is very knowledgeable about working with investors who maybe have claims of stockbroker misconduct and securities fraud. But on the other hand, he always tells us all about the good things and what we're supposed to be doing to avoid that. And that's what's important. A lot of times people are worried that they're not making enough money on their investments, and sometimes they get kind of worried and they get a little greedy, and then they go out of the thing they, you know, out of the safe place. I always look at this like a circle of green and yellow and red, and you know, and it's like on my gas tank. When I see it's gone from, you know, full and it starts to blink, and then I know I'm on empty, that's a problem. So my guest is attorney Peter M. Spett, and he actually is here in our studio, and he's going to tell us a lot of good things. So when listeners can get trustworthy, where can they get trustworthy information and education about investing in the financial markets, Peter?
So first of all, Anita, again, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. Just a quick tidbit about myself. I've been practicing law for 19 years in the securities law area. So I know a little bit about, you know, where people should go to find reliable information and where people can slip up. And this would be helpful to your listeners if they can grab a pencil and paper to write down some website addresses. I will get to that. But let me just begin by saying just the latest news. A couple weeks ago, last week, the Justice Department announced that they are going after Standard & Poor's. Standard & Poor's, who we all relied on for their AAA ratings of stocks, of debt. And there are only a handful of rating agencies out there, Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch. And these are places that people trusted, and now the Justice Department is going after them for the 2008 stock crash, where the real estate market tanked and there were bonds based on the real estate market, and basically caused a whole mess. It was an interesting thing. So people used to trust Standard & Poor's. I mean, Standard & Poor's, a AAA rating on a bond isn't, you couldn't get any better. And now people are not so sure, you know, given what happened. So do you remember Anita, who said, a famous person said, always use the expression, trust but verify?
Oh, I do remember that. I don't know who it was, but I remember that statement. Let's see. Who?
All right. It was back in the 1980s, and it was President Ronald Reagan when he was negotiating with the Soviet Union. I looked this up because it comes to mind now in this day and age where sources that we used to rely on are no longer sources that we can rely on, like Standard & Poor's, unfortunately. And he took it from a Soviet expression when he was negotiating with Mikhail Gorbachev on various matters, disarmament, etc. And trust but verify is a very interesting phrase because it really means that, yes, you can take what somebody says and it could be true and trustworthy, but the obligation then is back on you to find secondary information, to double check, get a second opinion, find reliable information to make sure what you're being told is true. Where can you find this? I mean, because we got to realize that when we have a financial advisor or a financial planner or investment advisor, sometimes their motives are not only driven by doing what's best for your long-term success, but they also get different types of commissions depending on the products they promote. So yes, they could be great and be doing you great service, and they could have been very successful for you in the past. But if they rely on Standard & Poor's and they say, look, you should buy this as a AAA rating of Standard & Poor's, well, now we know that that isn't the end-all be-all. So I have some websites that the listeners can go to and can find out, and I can go into more detail about that now if everybody's ready with pen and paper.
Okay, and before you do that, I want you to know again that I'm talking with Peter M. Spett, and he is an attorney. He's located in Boca Raton, and he helps people, actually investors, with claims of stockbroker misconduct and securities fraud. And we know that that occurs, and don't be embarrassed. And if you think, even if you think that you have been, you're in that category, he can tell very quickly. He'll ask you those right questions. And actually, I don't think it costs anything for you to work on their on their cases, does it?
Well, it's a free consultation. So anybody calls me, I listen to what they say, and I make an initial evaluation. After that, I do take contingency fee cases. Sometimes I work something else out. It depends on the situation. But there are many cases that I handle where the client only pays the cost of filing it with the arbitration panel, and all my attorney's fees are only if I collect do I get attorney's fees.
Right, and it wouldn't pay for you to take something that you didn't feel has some value. And since you've been in the legal profession for so long, you know pretty much. I think you can tell, because unfortunately, some people do stupid, foolish things, and then they want to get their money back, and we know that can't happen. But let's just go back now, and everyone, if you have your pencil and paper, we're going to give you some websites.
Right. So this month in the Boomer Times magazine, I wrote an article about the free investor education resources at the fingertips of anybody with a computer. And if you don't know how to use a computer, get somebody to help you. And these are very good websites. They're in simple language that everybody can understand, and it's designed for people to look from the more sophisticated investor to the investors who don't have a lot of knowledge and experience. It runs a whole range.
Are these government supported websites?
So the first website I would recommend listeners look at for both education and research is run by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. What is that? It is a what's called a self-regulatory organization. It's an organization set up to govern the brokerage houses by the brokerage houses. So every member, everybody who trades on the on the stock markets, all the stockbrokers, they're all members, and they all have to be registered with this organization called FINRA. And the website is www.finra, which is FINRA.org, then a /investors. That website, on that website, you can look up every stockbroker's record, see what their background is, what licenses they hold, what jobs they've held, and also if there've been any regulatory actions or investor claims against that broker. They're all listed there. It's publicly available. It's on something they call BrokerCheck. And very easy to use and search. It's a very good resource. Very good resource.
Trust and verify, right?
Right.
That's the perfect place to do that, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. What's the next one?
The next one is run by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which everybody has heard of. The Securities and Exchange Commission is actually a federal government entity, and they are there to act as a watchdog of all brokerage houses, all investment banks, but also, and this is an important function of them, they make the rules and they educate investors. They're out there to help everybody in the public, and that's their website for investors is www.investor.gov. Now, that's a really good website for education. The last time I checked, they had an article about 13 things every investor should know about investing. And you'd be surprised, but even the more experienced investors among us forget or just do not know, like, some very basic facts.
And they get over-enthusiastic.
Yes, yes. I mean, everybody wants to make money.
Well, my brother-in-law's in it, my friend's in it, everyone's in it, so we're going to be in it, right?
That's right. And so there's two more websites, and then, you know, I want to get into a little bit about these exotic investments out there. But two more websites I want to mention quickly. The Investor Protection Institute, it's not a governmental website, but it's actually designed from a fund that was made to protect investors. It was a part of a settlement fund. And it's www.investorprotection.org. And they, again, very good educational resource, very good research. If you have a securities issue that you might have something that you're not sure what it really is. Is it a mutual fund? Is it an exchange-traded fund? What is it? Am I in a small company? What kind of stock do I have, a big company? You can find these answers at these websites. The last one is the North American Securities Administrators Association, which is all the states' governments and the Canadian provincial governments. They form their own investor protection website, and they're at www.nasaa.org. Again, I really think that I go to these websites for my cases all the time and my claims. There's really free and good information, and more importantly, reliable information, because these are the entities that are the watchdogs of the stockbrokers. So their interest is to be on the investor's side, and I'm all about investor rights, the advocacy of investor rights. So these are excellent resources that the listener can rely on. And, you know, your stockbroker or financial advisor recommends something, you know, always, you know, take a heartbeat. Wait, and call them back and do your own research before
trust
you
and verify.
Trust and verify.
I love
that's
those words.
Thing.
I'm going to use that in a lot of
right,
cases.
Right, because it should apply to almost everything in life. Unfortunately, in this day and age, you have to be careful, especially with your money. I mean, because God knows we all need to have that nest egg, and it's very important for your listeners, and as you get up there in age, to be aware of where their money is and what the risks are involved in putting their money in various securities.
Okay, well, I want to ask you a question, because I've always said stockbrokers. I've always, you know, they were stockbrokers. I never thought of analyzing the word, but apparently they're not called that anymore. Why is that?
So, you know, we've been going back to the Ronald Reagan days, so why don't we go back there again? It used to be that everybody had a stockbroker. And that changed in the last couple of decades, I'd say. Since I've been an attorney, it's gone from the time where stockbrokers would be advising clients to invest in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and the most exotic thing out there maybe was option trading. Now we have all these exotic investments, and they have these great initial REITs, private placements, ETFs, ETNs, auction rate securities, CDOs, CMOs. You know, I go back to somebody who I really admire, Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett always, one of his things that he really lives by is, he doesn't invest in things that he doesn't understand or doesn't know. And he's a very long-time investor. I mean, he's probably one of the most successful investors in the history of this country.
And the richest man.
And
one of the richest
made
men.
Made him one of the richest men. And he will not invest in some of these things. And if you even looked at the New York Times this Monday, they had a front page article about exotic investments and retirees being put in these exotic investments for several reasons. Bank interest rates are very low, so people feel they can't just leave the money in the bank. They might as well stuff it in the mattress. And people are also afraid of the stock market. It's going up. It's going down. It's very volatile. And bonds are likewise, they're not paying what they used to pay. So people are being coaxed into some more iffy investments. That's being liberal. I would say these are investments that
– Risky.
Very risky. Very risky investments. And the article on the front page of the Times was like people are investing in private placements in a limousine company or in energy, renewable energy things that are very risky and being concentrated in these types of investments. And that's where you really get in trouble. You put, the bulk of your investments in these illiquid and risky, volatile things, and you don't know, the investor doesn't know what they are. So I can explain, I'll explain a little bit about these various products out there, but the general principle is if you don't know what it is and your financial planner or financial advisor doesn't give you a lot of hard information and explanation about what it is, or even if they do, you should be going to the Trust But Verify thing and looking at some of these websites, the FINRA website, the SEC website, and seeing actually what these products are and whether they have the right risk tolerance for you, because these, for the most part, are not conservative liquid investments.
And let me ask you about that. So isn't that where the fault really lies with the financial planner, that they look at a person, their age, what they have, and that they have a responsibility not to put them into it? Is that the way it works?
Yes, that's exactly right. I was in-house at Oppenheimer, CIBC Oppenheimer, now it's Oppenheimer & Company, and every brokerage house is regulated by FINRA, and they have obligations when an investor opens an account, and now as an ongoing obligation to look at and have recurring conversations between broker, stockbroker, and an investor as to the investor's time horizon, their liquidity needs, their income, their wealth, their net worth, their liquid net worth, and their net worth when you include something like a house. And come up with a comprehensive profile. It's just like you have your genes and everybody's different. Everybody has a different investment profile. And they are not supposed to, it's securities fraud to recommend unsuitable investments or an unsuitable investing strategy based on those types of criteria. So,
that's really where you would come in a sense. If someone has done something like that and you then have that person come to you and complaining, then you would look at that. And that's probably one of your questions. Why would you have put someone into that at this age?
Exactly. I mean, there are a lot of different types of securities fraud that happens. But I'd say for your listeners, this is probably the most prevalent and the one that a lot of other types of securities fraud abuses or broker misconduct abuses occur when they are being put in concentrated positions or in unsuitable positions with regards to these types of securities, or even in certain bonds and stocks. I mean, you have different types of stocks. You have your blue chips and you have your utilities, and then you have your technology stocks.
Well, they used to call them penny stocks. What really is a penny stock?
So this gets into something. It used to be that you had an exchange. It's now the NASDAQ, but it used to be over-the-counter. We used to call these over-the-counter. And over-the-counter had, and they still call these pink sheet stocks. Pink sheet stocks are stocks that don't trade on the main exchange, but they are what we call penny stocks. And one of the abuses that the newspapers note, that FINRA notes, are called private placements. Private placements is you are asked, it's almost like a initial public offering in a main stock. You are asked to invest in a small company that's traded for pennies. And it's only supposed to be sold to what's called an accredited investor, an investor who has over $2 million in net worth, an income of $250,000 a year or more. I mean, it's really – these are very risky and illiquid types of investments, and something that people are investing in now, unfortunately, because they are being told that you can beat the market or, you know, the stock market is too volatile. Put your money in here. This is the next big thing. And whenever somebody says you can beat the market or this is the next big thing, sirens should go off. I mean, at least trust but verify that. You know, go say I'll call you back and do a little bit of your own reading and research as well as looking at what they're sending you. But when you invest in something like a private placement, you're going to be getting having to sign things, signing a subscription agreement, and read. You're going to be sent a private placement memorandum, and those things that you're signing and that memorandum that you got in the mail, when you sign, you're saying as an investor, I'm an accredited investor. I can tolerate the risk. I understand everything that's written in this 150-page. Document in print that, you know, it's very, very small print. So, you know, these are all things that listeners should be very careful about. Private placements are also illiquid because they're not traded regularly. So if you need to get out of it, if some catastrophe happens or you need the money, then you're already selling and there's no buyers. You're going to be facing losses. So those are not something I would recommend anybody on a fixed income or in their retirement years be in. Another thing that's rearing its head right now, and it was just an action taken against David Lerner and Associates, which is a big bond trader up in New York and Long Island, are these non-tradable REITs. What are REITs? REITs are real estate investment trusts. And REITs, for the most part, some are traded on the regular stock exchange, very liquid, but non-tradable REITs are very illiquid, and very hard, once you put your money in, hard to get your money out. So if you ever need that money, very difficult. So there was big sanction against David Lerner, and he was suspended, actually, from the industry for a little while.
Oh, my goodness. Is that because they were pushing things that maybe they gave higher rates of return because they were more risky?
Right? It's exactly what we're talking about. They did not address the suitability of these types of investors to their clients, who were, for the most part, older investors, and they didn't have the requisite compliance for that. So, you know, investors need to be careful if something is illiquid. Another example recently was auction rate securities. Auction rate securities are things that they set the interest rate every month or every 21 days, and there's a whole bidding process, and it could be very – you could get locked in. And if you don't understand it, if it's not a regular stock or bond, if it's something that the newspaper said is exotic, which I would agree, exotic, be careful.
You know, I listen to you, and I'm saying, okay, so now this person wants to be smart. Who should he call, though? Besides, let's say he doesn't have a computer and he can't get on there. Who should he be talking to?
Well, I think that library is a good place to start, because even if you can't use, don't have a computer or can't use a computer, you can take these websites, just write them down and have a librarian help you with it.
Good idea.
But, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, the information out there on the internet is so vast, and it's become our go-to resource now that you really should have somebody with computer skills to help you and look it up on the computer. Otherwise, I would also say that just reading the business section of the newspaper, if you can't do it every day, if you don't have the discipline, just as much as you can, will make you a more informed and knowledgeable person. And then, of course, there's lots of books in the library about investing as well.
I think you bring up such good points. There's so many of them, you know, then I just want to tell everybody again who you are. But that's terrific that you're really warning them in a very – I don't know how you could warn someone in a positive way, but you have a talent for that. So
thank
attorney
you.
Peter M. Spett, he is located – his office is in Boca Raton. You can call him toll-free at 888-217-4919. That's 888-217-4919. If any of these things ring a bell to what he's telling you and you've gotten yourself into something like that, you need to go call him and see what he can do to help. His website is spettlaw.com. spettlaw.com. And then you'll be able to reach him. You know, Peter, I just hope that the economy is going to pick up so that people aren't so desperate and that they can do the right thing. But I think giving them all those good websites is the right thing to do. So we thank you very much for coming in and for helping people to be able to think, as you said, trust and verify. You gave me a whole new thing, and I appreciate that very much.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.